Well, happy fifth birthday, Cross Point. Great to celebrate with you today. You know, I realize that many of us probably came at many different years throughout that journey, and so we're excited you're here. My name's Kurt, by the way. I'm a pastor here at Cross Point, and these are two of my neighbors that are not new to the cross to the stage here at Cross Point. You guys have shared here, but I want you to hear a bit of their story here in just a moment, because, you know, as I think about us celebrating our fifth birthday, and what did we establish this place to be? You know, we said we wanted to create a place for people to just explore God at their own pace. I mean, similar to what we saw there with Brick and with Sue, this, you know, where we can ask questions, where we can explore, where, you know, we don't have to have it all nailed down in order to walk through the doors, and yet we can come, just kind of take things in and see if in some unique way God doesn't meet us along the way in that experience. And one of the other really big things that was a part of this dream was saying, you know, we just want a place where we can take our friends. We want a place where we can take our friends that maybe are in different places spiritually, where we're not embarrassed, where they come and they actually connect with what's going on. And so that's why I'm excited for you to hear Linda and Adejua's story today, because, you know, they started with this when Cross Point began. Now, I have to be honest, I did not give you guys the initial invite. In fact, I don't even know that I knew you at that time. It was my brother and sister-in-law that invited you guys to one of the first events at Cross Point. And yet, and it wasn't like it was just for our neighbors. It's not like, hey, if you're our neighbor, you can come. If you're not, stay out. I mean, it was this, you know, we want you, those of us that are gathering here, to say, hey, is there a place we won't be embarrassed to bring our friends. And so when you guys came to Cross Point, you know, 5 years ago, I mean, you were here maybe for an event before we launched and then for our opening weekend. You know, one of the things I know just through us dialoguing and talking and connecting over time is you guys were in very different places spiritually. You know, Linda, you'd grown up in the faith. You'd grown up in a church home. This was a, kind of a foundation for you. And yet, Adejua, you had a very different experience. Talk to us a little bit about what that was like for you and kind of what you experienced before you came to this place.
Well, I came from a mixed background. My father was an atheist. My mother was a Catholic, lapsed along the way. Religious instruction was mandatory in grammar school in Great Britain. And so I never knew exactly where I was. You know, there's condemnation on one side and school saying that, you know, you have to believe in God, you have to believe in Christ. And I never knew where I was. I called myself atheist in my early days. When I thought I got a little bit smarter, I called myself agnostic.
Because there's an enormous difference right there.
Yeah, there truly is.
There is a difference, yeah, there is a difference.
And I found I wasn't as smart as I used to think I was, so I opened my mind a little bit to learn some things. And really I started discovering and seeing things a little differently, I think, just before I met Linda. Linda's always grown up in a church environment and was a strong believer. Brought me more to the church, even though it still wasn't I really wanted to go every Sunday. I really wanted to do things during the week. Golf was my thing on Sundays, always was. Great crowd of guys I love playing with. And these days, it's church on Sundays and church during the week because we love the community aspect of it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, life has just changed, you know, so much for the better, and especially for the kids.
Yeah. So talk to us a little bit about that, Linda. I know for your family, you guys have grown. You've had, you know, significant experiences as a family going forward. What do some of those look like for you guys?
Well, I have to say first and foremost that I can't express that my kids are beautiful. I've been very blessed, or we've been very blessed, but you can't. we couldn't have done it without the family here, mm-hmm. and it was really important for us to find the right church, the right place for our kids to get to know God and get mm-hmm. to know Him in the way they want to know Him. Mm-hmm. And just as I see Him grow over the 5 years, it's just phenomenal. Throughout our regular days, we talk about things, you know, about God and everything. And for any of you out there that work in the kid groups, I laugh now. I think back when you know, and if you're parents, you know, in the cars, how they argue and fight in the car and everything. At one time, we had a lesson about game on and game off, and I'm driving. I said, game off! And they would all, okay, you know, and it's really inspirational.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of things, the molding that's occurred just because we were in the right place at the right time to come across Cross Point.
Yeah. And I know for me, one of the monumental moments for me in our first 5 years was about a year, year and a half ago, when we baptized you, Adejua, and not only you, but with two of your daughters as well, who saw Dad taking this step as you'd kind of worked to that point, struggled with grace, struggled with is it really free, and experiencing that, and then taking that step, and your children following your footsteps, which is just enormous. I mean, we could have shut down right then and say, oh man, this is what it's all about right here, and yet we want that to be continued forward. And so, why do you guys, 5 years ago, would you have ever imagined that you would be here 5 years later, deeply involved? I mean, you're wearing a yellow shirt, serving in Area 56 this morning. One of the liaisons was with one of our major missional projects. You know, Adejua serves around here nearly every weekend. You guys are engaged somewhere being a blessing to people. Why do you do that? What made you want to be a part of it in that way?
Well, I think it's what Crosspoint is all about. It's about community. I think I've said to Kurt on various occasions, it really dismays me when you go to a church, and I see them even today, and they're closed all week long. There's nothing going on. You come on Sundays, and that's it. In Cross Point, it's all about community. The fact that we're going to build a place that's going to be open to the community on a daily basis, and we can engage with the community, I think is a biggie. And I think it really started taking off for us, other than coming to service, which 5 years in is really as fresh as it's ever been. It's an awesome experience. But I think it's the Life Together groups. And I think I said in first service, if you couldn't have paid me enough money to go to a Life Together group. And the first one was at Julie and Kurt's house. And these days, I mean, we look forward to going. I have to mention my daughter, she said I had to, because she babysits, she loves going to the group, she loves coming to church, so does Erica, she serves here, and it's just a natural part of our lives, I think, anymore. There's no thinking, is it church and then home and then community? It's all engaged as one.
Mm-hmm. And Adejua was very real. I mean, when we first invited you guys to come to our group, it was during a journey, and we always say, hey, give it a shot for 6 weeks. We went around the circle and said, you know, why did you come? I mean, why are you all sitting here in our living room? And if I remember, you literally said, because you asked us to, and we felt like we needed to. And you gave the 6 weeks and out at the end. And then what was it, like 2 weeks in, you're like, I can't believe we've not been doing this for the last couple years. And so a significant part of that. Linda, why do you serve? What do you get out of being a part of this?
Well, it's not so much you guys are such an inspiration for us and our family and in our professions. I mean, as you know, you guys have helped in so many ways in my profession. I used to be a principal at IPS 96, and we created the Bucket Project down there. You guys came to me. You wanted to be a part of that, and it changed so many lives, and it'll continue to change the lives of several years down the road, but you just came into our lives, and you've changed our family's lives, and you continue to do that. I'm in the right place at the right time.
Awesome. Well, you know, this is kind of what we're talking about today. We're talking about a God who meets us wherever we are and bends, has a way of bending toward wherever we are. In fact, PJ, we're going to do a song right here that talks about that, about the love of God that just bends toward us wherever we are. Explain to us why we're going to do this right here. Thanks, guys.
But, you know, I don't see it as just this bending, but this chasing after, you know. We see time and time again, it's one of those things we talk about all the time around here, about how God chases after us. It's not just us looking and looking and looking, and God's over off in some special spiritual place just waiting for us to find Him. But He is constantly looking after us and running after us too. Makes me think a couple of weeks ago, which if I'm honest could probably have been a couple months ago. I don't really remember because numbers is hard. But I was putting dishes away, putting stuff back in the refrigerator, you know, cleaning up after dinner, and Angie took Isaac upstairs, and they were playing, and I heard this, like, shrill, ear-piercing scream. You know, it's that scream of a parent when they realize something is getting ready to happen to their child that's going to hurt them. And so I'm like, holy crap, what's going on? And so I, you know, come tearing around the kitchen, and I'm in my socks. And I slip on the floor and trip over the dog, and I am not a slight man. So watching me fall down is not a pretty picture. It's funny, but it's not very pretty. I fell down and I slid across our hardwood floor and creamed my leg on the corner of the wall. And there are a lot of reasons that I don't wear shorts around here, but right now, other than the fact that it's only 27 degrees outside today, one of them is I have this huge gash still across my shin from where I slammed into this corner of the wall. It's not pretty to look at. And so I get up, I'm limping up the stairs, and Isaac's screaming and crying, and I'd heard a couple of thuds, and I'm convinced he had started to fall down the steps. He and Angie were playing at the top of the steps, but they weren't playing at the top of the steps. That makes it sound like she's a bad parent. I promise she's not. They were playing in the loft that's at the top of our steps, and he was goofing around and started walking backwards towards the step, and she saw him start to fall, and so she jumped, she screamed, she caught him, bumped his head on the wall as she was catching him, and he's screaming bloody murder, and she's crying, and I'm crying because my leg hurts. But it's just this picture. Like, it's just this perfect picture to me of a picture of a God, of a father running after his child, getting hurt in the process, giving something up, you know, taking on pain, but running after to help rescue. And that's what this song is about. That's what we do at Crosspoint. That's what we talk about all the time. It's what we're here for. We're part of that running mission. And this song, it's an old one, you know, one that we used to do a lot in our early years. But it's exactly what it talks about, the love of God that's greater far than we can ever tell. So if you want to sing with me, please do.
God, that these words would ring true from it for us. You know, for many of us, we probably have these moments where we say, God, you know, do you really understand? Do you really know what's going on down here? Are you really in touch with where I am, the things I deal with on a day-in, day-out basis? And yet we're reminded, God, that there's not enough ink on the face of this earth to write the depth of the love that you have for us. So God, help us to see that today. Help us to experience that. That's what this place is built on. That there's a grace, that there was a price that was paid, and that it's all about love. It's about a love factor. And God, we need it. We long for it. Sometimes we don't know how to grasp it. Sometimes we don't know how to take it in. So help us to see today, God, how you bend toward us, and you meet us exactly where we are. I pray these things in your name and according to your character. Well, you know, no matter your spiritual origin, your background, you know, kind of like Linda and Adedua. I mean, two different places spiritually, two different upbringings, and yet, you know, in some unique way, we can come into this place and we can begin to see that God meets us exactly where we are. And, you know, if you're like me, sometimes I'm like, God, I think I know what I need, and I begin to tell God what I think is best. And oftentimes what I think is best isn't always what God thinks is best. And as we sang there in that song, you know, God has something way better in store for us. God has kind of a new reality that he wants to draw us into. And so for these next 5 weeks, we're taking a look at this accommodating Jesus. Now, is anybody freaked out? If you were in here for the countdown before service, anybody freaked out by the kind of like bobblehead Jesus looking at you? Yeah, a little freaky right there, right? I mean, we're not talking that weird kind of like Jesus does anything and everything, but we're saying, you know, that there are places continually throughout the Bible, throughout the progressive story of God, where we see God continually accommodating the brokenness of humankind. And this is a really big idea. What I want us to grasp over these next weeks is this idea that, you know, sometimes you say, well, if God accommodates us, then that means God's not really the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow. It means God continues to change and ebb and flow, and he's just like you and I. One day we're over here, the next day we're over there. No. It has nothing to do with that. It more has to do with us continuing to understand the nature and the character of God. And so here's what I want us to grasp. God's accommodations do not contradict his character, but what we see over and over again is that they continue to reveal his character. That when we see these episodes, these moments, that it actually reveals that the depth and the nature and the love that God has for us, and how he'll do nearly anything to meet us exactly where we are. And so I want to give us a picture of this today as we kick this thing off. In fact, we find it in Genesis. We often go back to Genesis. It's often where we start. And so I want to go back to the Genesis account. And we find this very first place where God actually accommodates. And this is, if you're not familiar with the Genesis story, this is where Adam and Eve are placed in the garden. They're the first created human beings. You know, it's where we see God give them dominion over everything in the garden. God says, hey, you're free to steer this thing, to manage this thing, to take the garden someplace, have fun, be fruitful, multiply. You have dominion over everything except this one thing, this one tree. And he said, outside of this one tree, everything is yours to enjoy. Now, can you imagine what the one thing they were drawn to was? I mean, you know, we're told today, oh, stay away from everything but this. And what are you drawn toward? You're drawn toward the one thing. It's like there's this question in your mind, is God holding out on me? Is there something there that if I experience it, then I'll know more? And so they're drawn to this tree. Eve picks the apple, and guys, we blame Eve for it. Listen, the guy was standing right there. Adam was there watching, all right? So you were a part of this, and it's what created what's known as the fall. Now, the fall is like a sissy word. I think it was more like a crash, all right? It was more, have you ever heard an automobile accident? I mean, you can hear it miles away. I mean, it was like a crash, a thud. This was a downward spiral that you and I are still experiencing the remnants of today. And so here's where we pick this up in the Genesis account, chapter 3, verse 7. It says, then the eyes of both of them, Adam and Eve, were opened, and they realized something. They realized they were naked. So they sewed fig leaves together and made coverings for themselves. So you see, something happened right here. All of a sudden, God instructed them not to do something, and they were perfectly in good condition. They were naked and they didn't even know it. Imagine life that way. You're naked and you didn't even know it. I mean, you're there free for the whole world to see, not just in a physical sense. All right, if you're here for the Collision series of the last 4 weeks as we're looking at where sex and spirituality collide, we realize that nakedness is way more than just a physical thing. This is emotionally. This is relationally. There was no delineation for Adam and Eve between being naked and not naked. They didn't know any difference because everything was out in the open and it was okay. And then all of a sudden, sin entered in. They did the one thing God asked them not to do.
And they become aware of something. All of a sudden, they're in a place that they'd never been before. In fact, here's what it says in verse 9 and following. It says, the Lord called to them and said, where are you? He answered them, I heard you in the garden and I was afraid because I was naked, so I hid. Now, you know what this reminds me of? A few years ago, when our oldest child, Macy, was getting ready to go to kindergarten for the first time. She didn't flunk, so she was going for the first time. And, it was like 3 days before school started. My wife's a teacher, and so she went to her first teacher work day. That meant Kurt was on duty with the kids, and, I was making a work day at home. They were upstairs playing for a couple hours or so, and it got eerily quiet, all right? They're like 5 and 3, 5 and 2 and a half at the time. And so I go up, and I yell up the stairs, hey, Macy and Matt, what's going on? And I hear nothing. That is not a good sign, just in case you wonder. If you don't have kids, it's never a good sign. So I walk to the top of the stairs. Hey, Macy, Matt, what's going on? Where are you guys at? Absolutely nothing. I look down the hallway. Macy's door is closed. So I go down and I kind of peek in the door to hear voices behind the bookshelf. And I'm like, guys, what are you doing back here? I haven't heard you for a while. They both emerge with no bangs. All right. Scissors in one hand. One of them has hair in the other. Macy's getting ready to start kindergarten in 3 days. I think we had like family pictures scheduled the next day. As you can imagine, they were hiding. I went and hid because I knew when Julie came home, and this was not going to be good. All right. And so, I mean, this is what's going on right here. All of a sudden, they're in a different place. They knew something was not right with this situation, and they go and they hide. And then the next thing God says right here is absolutely insightful. This gives us insight into your life, into my life, into why we do the things we do. Take a look at what it says. It says, and he said, God said, who told you you were naked? He's like, you've never been aware of that before. And then he says, have you eaten from the tree that I commanded you not to eat from? You see, there was something that happened right there. God was like, whoa, how do you even know that you need to be hiding? How do you even know that you need to be covering something up? Did you eat from this tree? Did you do the thing I asked you not to do? I mean, isn't it interesting how it's like built in? We know as soon as we do the thing we're not supposed to do, we immediately go, and what do? We cover ourselves. We hide. It goes on. Next few verses. And this is kind of the result. It says, God told the woman, I'll multiply your pains in childbirth and you'll give birth to your babies in pain. You'll want to please your husband, but he'll lord it over you. Remember that sentence right there. You will want to please your husband, but he will lord it over you. And then he told the man, because you listened to your wife and ate from the tree, the very ground is cursed because of you. Getting food from the ground will be as painful as having babies. As for your wife, you'll be working in pain all life long. The ground will sprout thorns and weeds. You'll get your food the hard way, planting and tilling and harvesting, sweating in the fields from dawn to dusk until you return to the ground yourself, dead and buried. And so there's two huge revelations that come out of this. In fact, we tapped into them a few weeks ago in our game day teach-off when Dr. Lisa Pay was here with us talking about the fall and the origins of the fall and how it impacts our sexuality. Well, this deal impacts every aspect of who we are. You see, we find these two great revelations that have trickled through the rest of human history from that day forward, and that is this. He says, women, you're going to try to please your husband, and you're not going to be able to do it. And he's saying, women, you're going to fear abandonment out of the fall, out of what took place in the garden. From this point forward, there's going to be this sense of disconnect, of man, I'm being left. I'm left on my own. And as much as you try to please, you're going to be left with this feeling of abandonment. And men, you're going to fear competency. You're going to have to work for your food. You're going to have to till the ground. You're not going to always produce things when you do it. You're going to constantly be working to get food for your family, yet it's not always going to be productive. And he said, you're going to constantly fear competence. Man, I good enough. The two direct things that trickle down out of the fall or out of the crash, and the result is what's called performance. Something you and I face each and every day. Performance. As a result of our fear of abandonment and our fear of competency, you and I begin to cover ourselves. We try to put shells. We try to put things on the outside to make us look like we're different than we really are. And this is huge. This taps into our very identity, our longing to cover ourselves up. And it's natural, right? I mean, it's natural to want approval, right? I mean, it's natural to want to go into a community and to be inside community, to go towards communities, kind of self-select communities that approve of us. I mean, it's healthy to do that, right? I mean, there's a part of that at least is healthy. Because I mean, if you don't do that, what are you? If you don't do that, you're like the Unabomber, right? You're like Ted Kaczynski. Remember that guy? He's like weird, out of touch, totally out of tune with reality because he's not connected in community. And so there's a healthy element of us being in community to seek approval and affirmation of others. And the question we have to ask, am I living for the affirmation of others, or am I receiving my affirmation, my approval from my Heavenly Father. And there's a moment when this happens in life. I mean, there's a moment where we decide, man, I'm good on my own. I can do this on my own. I don't need God. I don't need God's approval. I don't need to do it God's way. You know, where we feel like, man, I'm better off separate from God. I mean, there's a moment for every one of us where this happens. It's kind of a normal part of life. In fact, the Apostle Paul talks about this in his letter to the Ephesians. Here's what he says. In case you're wondering, if you're kind of, maybe this is something that you don't really deal with. He says, as for you, you were dead in your transgressions and sins, in which you used to live when you followed the ways of this world and the ruler of the kingdom of the air, the spirit who is now at work in those who are disobedient. And here's where he says. He says, all of us. Who does he say? Who? All of us. He says, who is prone to this right here? Who's prone to want to separate ourselves from God? All of us. Who's prone to be disobedient sons and daughters? He says, all of us. Who's prone to going after all of the ways of the world, all the things the world has to offer to try to cover up ourselves instead of going after God? He says, all of us. He goes on. He says, all of us lived among them at one time, gratifying the sinful cravings of our sinful nature and following its desires and thoughts. Like the rest, we were by nature deserving of wrath. You see what Paul's saying right here? Is you and I have something called muscle memory. We have muscle memory. We still today are dealing with identity issues, issues of abandonment, issues of competency, issues of feeling like, man, I need to perform. I need to look different than I really am. And he says this is muscle memory that goes all the way back to the crash that happened with Adam and Eve. Newt Gingrich, he gave us kind of a little glimpse into his life a few years ago in an article with Vanity Fair. In fact, here's what he said. He said, so that's the background. So people assume I'm some right-winged, out-of-touch Neanderthal who doesn't get it. You probably thought that before as well. I'm adopted. I'm abandoned. I mean, give me a break. I was furious because I found out that my real father had agreed to allow me to be adopted. And so what he's saying right here is, hey, I act the way that I am because I'm abandoned. I'm dealing with abandonment issues right here. And part of the reason he's acting the way he is the same reason the people that are on the left are acting the way they're acting. We self-select communities based on people. We say, I want to be like this. I want to be accepted by these people. And so we change ourselves to become like that. This is the thread that goes all throughout life. It's like we're abandoned orphans that perform simply to get approval. I mean, let me flesh this out. Let me kind of tease this out a little bit for us this morning. You know, we do this all the time. I've done this. New Year's resolution. I want to get fit, right? I want to get fit. I've said that for like 12 years straight. I used to do it, and now it's like on the wayside. But what do? We say, I'm going to get fit. But getting fit isn't good enough, right? As soon as you start to get fit, you're like, man, I think I'm going to run a 5K. And so you run a 5K, and then you knock that goal down, and what do? You're like, now I'm going to do a 10K. Knock that goal down. Now I'm a half marathoner. Now I'm a full marathoner. What do you do after a full marathon? You begin to triathlon. Oh, I'm going to be an Ironman. It's like every goal we knock down, it's like we get a certain sense of approval. Oh man, you're looking good. You ran a half marathon, and that feeds our need for approval. Sometimes we don't get the promotion. Sometimes we don't get the promotion. And here's the deal. A lot of times it's not about the money that we didn't get that came with the promotion. We're going, oh my word. You mean there's somebody else in this company that you chose over me? I mean, you actually like somebody else's work. You felt somebody was more competent than me. I mean, you know, when I interact with people that are unemployed, especially guys, this is a really big, hard issue. I mean, as guys, and I think as women too, as guys though, much of our validation comes from working. And when you're unemployed, when you're not working, when you're not in that environment where you can kind of put your hands to something, you can produce something, you can show, hey, this is where I show my worth and I bring some value to myself and my family, and it can get out of hand. You know, this is why so many of us excessively, in every aspect of life, we're looking for validation. I mean, this is why when somebody looks twice at us, and we're like, oh man, they look twice at me. And all of a sudden, we're like, man, I'll do anything to get somebody to notice my hotness, right? Right? I mean, as soon as somebody's like, oh man, you look good, and they do a double take, you're like, man, they like what I'm wearing. And so you know what it does? It feeds us. We'll do anything. We'll adjust our diets. We'll adjust our workouts. You know, we'll Botox. We'll do plastic surgery. Man, if it helps people notice our hotness, we're like, man, I'm going to do that again. Because we long for this approval. And let me be honest, I'm not saying any of this stuff is wrong. I'm just saying, what's the motive? What's the reason that we do these things? Is it because we find that I get more approval and it feeds that internal longing, that internal yearning? And here's the thing. We think about these things, I list these things out. every single one of these things will let you down. All of them. This is what's fascinating. I mean, one day you're going to retire and there will be no more promotions. One day you're going to be right-sized if you haven't been already. One day, and I'm just kind of calling it how it is, gravity is working right now and you will begin to sag. All right, as beautiful as you, as hot as you think you are right now, you will begin to sag. And it's just a reality. Time is ticking on. And we have to say, you know, these earthly masters that control us, they eventually will take over. In the end, they win. If that's where we get our approval. I mean, some of us are in jobs right now because that's what our parents wanted us to do. You know, you always wanted to work with your hands, but they thought, man, I want you to go to college. You're going to college. So you went to college, you got a degree you didn't want, and now you're in a job that you really don't want to do. And you just want to be working with your hands, but you're living out someone else's dream. Or maybe, you know, you're in a circle of knowledge, of expandable knowledge, where, you know, all the people around you have a lot of degrees and you're always growing and learning. There's nothing wrong with growing and learning, but growing and learning has began to become something that people approve of in you. So you keep adding the letters behind your name. You keep pursuing the next degree because it's a way to seek approval, to seek acknowledgement. And let's be honest, this trickles down into the Christian world as well. I remember when I first got adopted into God's family, when I first became a Christian. I remember, you know, that there were people all around me that loved the Bible. And I grew up in a Christian community. I love the Bible, Bible this, Bible that. I got so sick of hearing about the Bible. Anybody get tired every now and then? Bible, 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 Bible. And listen, I'm pro-Bible, all right? Don't think we're not pro-Bible, all right? Pro-Bible, I read it every day. I try to trend my life after the Bible. But here's the deal. Here's what was going on. I had people around me that would say, man, Kurt, if you just grow in your knowledge and understanding and reading the Bible, then God is going to bless you more. And I'm like, really? I mean, in fact, I had one of my mentors, I call him mentors, an interim pastor that I had, who was a former president of a university early in my career. He said to me, Kurt, you know, for the things you're going to want to do, you're going to want to start seminary right now. I'm like, really? Is that what I do? My goal is to approve, for you to approve, and as long as I learn more, then I'm good and God will love me more. You see, I remember like having this chart on the wall. Anybody remember gold stars on the wall? I mean, if you didn't grow up with this, man, you are blessed, all right? You know, a chart with gold stars, and you'd have to memorize verses of the Bible. And every time you memorize one, you got to put a gold star on. Here's what I would do. I was pastor's kid. I'd go in, I'm like, I should know this. I should know these verses. And I didn't know them. So I would write them on my hands. And when I got in there, I'd do this. Oh, man, I don't know this verse. I don't know this verse. Man, what's this verse? And then I'd start reading 1 Corinthians 3:18 says, because I was so longing for the approval of people that were Christians. I mean, I was actually breaking one of God's commands, seeking approval. I mean, it's fascinating. And, you know, by the way, isn't this one of the reasons that people don't go to church today anyway? I mean, isn't it because they're like, why would I self-select a community that's not going to approve of what I'm doing or where I am? I mean, why would I do that? I mean, and God asks us to challenge us and calls us to grow. That's a teaching for another time. But right now, I'm really trying to help us get this attitude, get this characteristic of God, that God doesn't ask us to perform. God doesn't say, hey, perform or prove you're worthy to me. He says, hey, you know, these are things that are man-made. I mean, I look back now to when I was growing up. Even now, I see this every now and then. I see somebody who, you know, they seem to have all their stuff together. They've got all their junk together. They're disciplined. Maybe they work out. They're buff. You know, they just look like the ideal specimen of a human being. What do we say? And what do Christians say about people like that? I mean, they would be a great Christian, right? They would be a great Christian. They got all together. And what does that mean? They would be a great Christian. I mean, does that mean you're just a performer? I mean, as long as you get it all together and have good coverings on the outside, then man, that makes you great? Is that really what you have to know God? And so, you know, I say, no, this isn't what it is. This is what causes us to cover ourselves up, the need to look this way. You know, here's what I realized, even in my Christian life. I began to realize that, you know, when I come to the place of just performing and saying I have to put this cover on the outside and make my life look a certain way and act a certain way and look like I get everything buttoned up in a certain way, you know what? That gets pretty addictive. What I've learned is that people are like, man, Kurt, you got it together. And it just causes me to continue to cover up and cover up so I don't let them down. And in my mind, I begin to say, well, as long as I do these things, or as long as I teach these words and tell people what they want to hear, as if I would do that some Sunday. You know I don't do that because I step on your toes all the time. I get emails of people like, man, you offended me greatly. I'm glad. And so, you know, but if I just, in previous times in my life, I just, this is what they want to hear. So let me say that. And then when I don't get the approval I want, you know what it creates? It creates entitlement. Man, I did this. I did what I thought they wanted. How's come I'm not getting the approval now? And you know what entitlement leads to? Entitlement leads to competitiveness. Competitiveness, man, we get competitive in all kinds of things. You could be an upstreet playing checkers with kids, getting competitive, right? I mean, you're competitive in business. We get competitive with our families, right? I mean, we're like, man, you know, my 1.5-year-old pooped outside the diaper for the first time. She is way more ahead of everybody else her age. I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing what we get competitive on. And since we're talking about parenting, let's talk about parenting for a moment. Have you ever noticed that when it comes to parenting, this is like the one area of life we don't want advice in? When it comes to parenting, I mean, it's the one place nobody ever wants advice. You know why we don't want advice? Because when we get it, it usually means that somebody has a disapproval for our methods. They don't approve of my methods. And you're like, oh, come on, don't you want constructive criticism? I mean, people say that to me all the time. You want some constructive criticism? No, I don't. I don't want constructive criticism. I do want that. I mean, I long for it. I have to build it into my life because it's not something I go seeking after. I mean, even the sea sandwich, you know what the sea sandwich is? Where you give somebody a compliment and then a criticism followed by a compliment and it's supposed to feel really good. I've tasted that. I sucked on that sandwich. It sucks. It really does. At the end of the day, it's bad. It's bad. What are all these things about? These are all about our identity. It's about the crash. It's about this abandonment, this feeling of I'm going to need to perform in order to be worthy that traces all the way back to the garden. And so when God sees Adam and Eve sewing fig leaves together to cover themselves up, he sees them working to win his approval. And take a look at what he does right here. Here's where he accommodates. It says, the Lord God made garments of skin for Adam and his wife, and he clothed them. I mean, was God making a fashion statement? Was he like, hey, guys, the leaves aren't really in. They weren't in, you know, a couple hundred years ago. Not going to be in, you know, in 2012. I mean, is he making a fashion statement right here? No, he's not making a fashion statement. He's not concerned that it looks more like a bikini and less like a one-piece swimsuit. He's like, you know, it has nothing to do with what I'm seeing. He said, it has to do with the idea that you seem to think that you need to cover yourself up in order to be worthy of me. And God accommodates us. For the first time in all creation, God does something that he never intended to do. He actually takes one of his creations, one of the animals, one of the gifts that he gave to the world, something with a hide, something with a fur, something with a skin, and he sacrifices that animal in order to give a covering to Adam and Eve. It said, the Lord God made garments of skin. He took a hide, he made a sacrifice, and he gave it to Adam and Eve. Now, what's fascinating right here is the Bible is a progressive revelation of God's heart. And here, right at the very beginning, we see God's heart bending toward Adam and Eve and saying, guys, for the rest of your lives, you're going to want to cover up the places where you feel inadequate. Right here, let me accommodate you. Let me give you a covering. In fact, this is the first remnants of redemption right here. The first time God says, hey, let me give something up that I love. Let me sacrifice. Let me take the life of something I love so that you can be covered and you don't have to work to cover yourself up. It's about redemption. It starts with redemption. And so as we think about that this morning, as you think about, you know, where do I cover myself up? Where am I constantly trying to portray that I'm somebody that I'm not? Where am I constantly seeking to perform in order to show that, man, I've got something going on here? Where in my life do I feel abandoned and I continually try to put on a front to cover and show that, man, I'm a little better. I'm a little more worthwhile. I'm a little more lovable than I feel like I am. So we think about these. Earlier, we had you fill out this connection card that looks like this. I want you to take this out. And on the back side are some next steps. And, you know, something we do each week here at Crosspoint is we just give you a little space to say, you know, what's my next step? It's not just about coming into an auditorium for an hour or so. But what am I going to do? What am I going to do when I leave this place? What is this understanding of how God has bent and accommodated me so I don't have to cover up? What does this mean for me to live out and walk out this week. Maybe you don't know. Maybe you're like, man, do I really cover up? Maybe you need to have an open, honest conversation with God about an area in your life. Say, God, is there some place I am covering up that I just need you to bring redemption so I can be free? Maybe you know what that is. Maybe you know that there are places in your professional life, in your family life, in your you know, personal life, as if you have one, you know, and nothing's really personal. And you just keep covering. You keep putting coverings over those. And you just need to say, God, I need you to redeem this. I need you to bring value and to show me that I am of value and I no longer need to cover. There's another card before you fill that out I want you to take out. It's this card that says invest and invite. Go ahead and take these out for just a moment. You know, a couple times a year, we really trend our hearts toward people around us who need to experience the love and grace of God. Maybe you're one of those people here today. Here's what's really cool. You know, back when CrossPoint started, there was about 48 or 50 adults on our launch team. And if you were not one of those 48 or 50 adults that helped launch this thing 5 years ago, then let me just tell you are here because people were praying for you. I don't believe it's an accident. That entire team at that time was praying for people on their hearts that they said, man, there are people in our lives that we believe need to experience the redemption, the freeing, the uncovering that God brings to our lives. And you may have trickled in this year, last year, maybe when we first opened. It's because people were praying. It's because God's people were intentional about saying, hey, we care enough about our friends. We want to help them, introduce them to this God that we know. And I tell you what, you talk about a God who accommodates. Take a look at what Peter says in his second book, chapter 3. He says, the Lord is not slow in keeping his promise, as some understand slowness. Instead, he's patient. You see, they knew God was coming back one day and there would be a judgment and we would all have to account for where we are. He says, no, God is not slow. He's being patient. He's accommodating. You know why? Because he doesn't want anyone to perish. He wants everyone to come to repentance, everyone to come into relationship with him. So he's giving more time. Maybe this is where you are. Maybe you're like, man, I'm glad God accommodated and hasn't returned yet so I can enter in. Maybe that's where you are. Maybe you need to take that step toward Christ for the very first time and allow his sacrifice to cover you. One of the things I want to ask is, you know, over these next 5-6 weeks, will you identify two or three people in your life, and will you pray for them? People that you say, man, they need to experience. I mean, I look at them and I see some of the brokenness, and this isn't condemning or judgmental of me. I just see how their life could be so much different if they came into a relationship with Christ. And would you commit over the next 6 weeks to just pray for opportunities to invest in their life? Maybe to invite them to a service, to invite them to one of your Life Together group gatherings. Every single one of us are prone toward abandonment and performance. So take a few moments to identify your next steps. Maybe identify some people. You say, I just want to get these people on my heart. I want to pray that God would just create a collision in their life like he did with me. Now let's see what God does as we march toward Easter over these next weeks. Take a few moments and we're going to sing.